everyone, to Paranormal Roundtable. I'm your host, Josh Turner, also known as Wolf. With me today is Anthony and Tony. I said it really quick before you could say anything. And he's brought Banjo so he can pee on things. So everybody, welcome to Paranormal Roundtable. What we got tonight is a pretty good encounter story. But before we get into that, let's say a few things. And we'll keep it brief. We have a Facebook group. Please go join. It keeps you abreast of everything that's Paranormal Roundtable. We also have a holistic healing group and a prayer group, a Paranormal Roundtable prayer group. And then we have Paranormal Lounge. And then we have a Facebook page, and it's Josh Wolf Turner from Paranormal Roundtable. I only got like a couple thousand followers on there and 1,700 likes, but it doesn't matter because I haven't been using it for a long time, and I just started using it again recently. So if you want to go join that and follow it, I'm going to start doing some things and making videos and and putting them onto that Facebook page. So, okay, if that's something you'd like to be a part of, then go check it out. Become a follower. I'm also JoshTurner940 on Instagram. So if you can go and sign up for that or join me there, whatever you want to call it, and you can follow me on Instagram. And I've written two books, Werewolves and the Dogman Phenomena and the Bigfoot Phenomena, and those are on Amazon. So go look me up, Josh Turner, Werewolves, Bigfoot, it'll come up. And so if you're interested in that. The other thing we need to talk about, Patreon. We have a Patreon. If you want to support the show, that's a great way to support the show. Or you can buy a shirt or a hoodie or whatever. It all helps. The Patreon is $10, $20, $30, $40, $50 tiers. $10 is basic. You get an autographed book from one of many authors. And the $20 tier, after 2 months, basically, you're eligible to get the book and a shirt. And then a few other little things we throw in there. And then the $30 tier, you get two books and a shirt. And then the $40 tier, you get two books, one of my autographed books, and they're all autographed, of course, and then a shirt. And then if you get the $50 tier, you get two books and then both of my books and a shirt. So pretty good deal. And you might get a hat or a hoodie or whatever it is we have in stock. If we don't have your size of T-shirt or hoodie, you might end up getting a hat, but you'll get something that says Paranormal Roundtable on that you can wear. So it's a pretty good deal. What else? Paranormal Soundtable is our music label. We have multiple songs coming out every week. We just released The Flying Dutchman. Go check that out. That's another one. Nelly is the one that writes these. She puts together that and then all we do is have somebody sing it. Michael Spencer, who sang The Bear King, also sang The Flying Dutchman. So go check that out. And as of this recording, I think the Mermaid song may be close to being done or being done. And so that'll be another one that'll be good. Hopefully it'll come out soon. So let's be friends on Facebook. Send me a friend request to my Facebook. And hopefully I can, if you let me know that you're a listener, more than likely I can approve you. And that's about it. So this episode is one that I had referred to during the live stream. Now, if you're a person who only listens to the show on one of the platforms like Spotify, that's fine. But you're missing out if you don't listen to Spotify and go and listen to the live stream. And I hear people say, "Well, I can't do the live stream because I listen to it at work." You can listen to it. You don't have to watch it. You don't have
to be a part of it. I mean, they're all recorded, so you can come go back and check out any of them.
You can go back and check out any of them, or you can listen to it while we're doing it. You don't have to look at it and watch me.
In fact, I mean, that gives you plenty of content to look at while you're waiting for the next one to drop, so it's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, and we retell people's encounters, and we have people that come on and tell their stories. Friday, we have a guest. Saturday, we do the UAP, which has been one of my favorite shows. We have like a few different people that come on, and we all talk about the alien agenda and how it ties into the cryptid field and ghost field. And then we do it again on Sunday, and I retell people's encounters. So go check out the live streams. But right now, what we're talking about is the Costa Rican werewolf. That's the story what this story was, it was a guy that reached out to me, and his name was Joe, and it was Joe and one other guy who did not give me permission to use his name, but I didn't ask, and so we'll just call him Mike. But Joe actually, you know, told me, hey, yeah, I have no problem using my name, whatever. And he is not from Costa Rica, and neither is Mike. They're actually Hispanic descent. Mike is actually Cuban, and Joe is Mexican. And they lived in Florida, and they went to Costa Rica to help build, with the company they're working for, to help build a hotel, or I should say renovate a hotel. And then it turned into a big quagmire, not just the build, getting it done. This was years ago, and I'm going to be a little bit vague here because it's the hotel's still in operation now, and I don't know how they feel about me talking about them and saying that all the stuff that went on. The reason that they told me about it was because of the possible dogman werewolf connection. Somebody who I appreciate this got in touch with Joe, and he basically told him, hey, you know, there's a guy that can listen to your story. What you have is a pretty amazing story. Those two met on a construction project in Mississippi and became really good friends. And while they were working together, he told this guy, Ron, that's the guy that gave him my information. He told Ronnie, hey, you know, there was something that happened to them when they were in Mississippi. They were driving, and I thought this was most important. And we'll start with this. They were driving down the highway, going to the job site, and they saw something very brief go across the road that can only be described as a 7-foot-tall werewolf. And it was very brief, like I said. It was a reddish-brown color, but it had a snout, and it had really oversized legs, like the thighs, everything, the way they described the legs looked like it was mostly leg. You know, it was weird. But you get those weird stories where sometimes the upper body's oversized or the legs are oversized. Well, this one was like the legs very pronounced, very dog-like. But it had the head was small compared to its legs, and the upper body was kind of scrawny compared to its legs, once again. And they both saw this along with a third person who I don't know who that person was, but they said there was another worker they had. And they began to talk about it. And over the coming week, Ronnie told me, he goes, man, this guy told me this story. And I was just going to go and tell the story based on what Ronnie had told me because he gave me the whole thing. But when he told me that Joe was willing to talk to me, I thought, well, why not talk to Joe? So we'll call him Joe R. Joe R basically told me that this story was like a life-changing event for him, to the point where after he went through this with two of his other coworkers, in particular two that were he was good friends with, there was a third one, yes, that went from Florida. That person since moved away from Florida, got remarried, and lives up in upstate New York and refuses to talk about the events that took place. And these events that took place were in 1990, from 89 to 1991, basically, mostly in 1990, because that's when he was there. But that's when these renovations and these things were going on. And so what happened was there was a hotel, and things work differently in countries that are not, you know, like,
let's just doing the best.
Yeah. They just kind of do the way things do. You know what I mean? And so this hotel had a lot of violations of codes and everything else. And the authorities finally told him something. And he said, I don't know how this thing was still functioning and how it didn't collapse. But he said, when we got there, the hotel was not in good shape. It was in a very bad way. And he had recommended that they tear it all down. His boss told him, hey, we should just tear this down and start over. They didn't want to do that. So they set about the business of trying to expand it and leaving this old section of the hotel intact, which really and surely, truly should not have happened. And he said that it was a dangerous place. Dangerous in the way that he saw on the surface, the danger was not realizing what other danger lurked there. He just thought, you know, all they had was like plastic up and, you know, the third, fourth floor, whatever. He goes, you could walk off that floor if you're not careful and just fall to your death, you know? And he said that, you know, when you get up to the fourth, fifth floor in particular, he goes, it was kind of sketchy because the wind would blow and it would blow into, you know, the hallways where you had to walk. And all they had was plastic up on the, I think he said the south end of it. So if the wind blew hard enough, potentially you could, you know, get knocked off of there. And he said it was on a spot where it was very windy. And he said at one night he was working there and the plastic came flying up and you know, that they used to cover, you know, that's all it was. Just, you know, it was just like an entire wall that was not there for several floors. And then it was like, and he said he was on the fifth floor and he almost fell. Like he literally, the wind knocked him off his feet and one of his coworkers grabbed him and kept him from basically falling to his death. And he said that it was a dangerous place. So, but what happened was him and the workers, he had a crew that he ran and most of them were from Costa Rica. They were people that he had hired, that the company had hired there. And they got to know each other. And he said, we became pretty good friends. And then me and Mike, that was the Cuban dude. He goes, we were growing up. We were good friends. We grew up together. And he said, we ended up going out there to work. I had known Mike since I was 15, he said. And he's like, pretty much everything Ronnie told you. He goes, yeah, it was pretty spot on. Now, there was a couple things that Ronnie did not know completely, you know, the whole story. And those are the things I was really interested in finding out. And so talking to Joe, it opened my eyes to put some pieces together. And so I had a few questions for him. The first question I had was, how much were they paying you to go through all that? And it wasn't enough in my estimation. I mean, even looking back on the prices of things back then, I don't think it would have been enough for me to even deal with the danger that he went through. But we're not going to talk about all the danger and everything that happened. We're going to talk about what they encountered. The second night he was there, now you got to realize they were still trying to operate this hotel while they were building. So the north end, they were going to let that part where the hotel desk and everything, they were going to let that stay and they were going to work on the south end, close it up and then do the same thing to the other side, moving the entrance temporarily. And it was just a complete mess. And he said, he didn't know how it was supposed to work. And they really didn't have blueprints.
Wow.
So they were supposed, yeah. So they were supposed to just kind of feel their way through this. And he's like, how in the heck?
It's going to play it by ear.
Yeah. Are we supposed to do this? And come to find out, some of the money that was involved in this was not even from, let's put it this way, legal sources. You know, it was like he found out all kinds of stuff.
Everything was under the table.
Everything was just kind of jacked up, man. And they were, yeah. So it was a big mess. And he said that the people who were involved in doing this, getting this construction done, they weren't interested in hearing about problems. They just thought, give you more money, you deal with it. But what I thought, the money was not good enough. I told him, I said, I would have been gone. There was an issue almost immediately. The second night he was there, he talked to the front desk clerk and she told them that they were supposed to have a suite on the fourth floor. Now, the fourth floor where he was at, if you go down the hallway, there was like a big sheet of plastic. And then if you went beyond that, there was like another 50 feet of like a room. You know, rooms, whatever, and then there was no wall. And so he said we were on in a hallway that if you took off running down the hallway and you went through the two sheets of plastic, you would fall to your death, basically. And so these two rooms were two adjoining suites. And he said that the first thing that happened on, like he said, the second night he was there. She told him, yeah, this is where you're going to be at, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Because the first night they were there, they had to sleep out in the parking lot because they didn't have any place to put them. And the crew that was there before had left. And he found out that he was actually part of the third crew to work on this thing. Each crew basically messing it up worse than the one before. And if it, like I said, if it was me, I would have just turned around and went home.
Yeah, that sounded a good sign. Yeah. A revolving door of people.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we've been through that situation when it came to the Church of the Forgotten. So this is what happened. He said the second night, he goes, some of the guys were out in the hallway and they were talking, and we were waiting for by the third day, we were waiting for the next day, which was going to bring in the workers. And he said, you know, we couldn't do much until we got our crews together. And he said, we had about 10, 12 people we were waiting on. And so there were six of us, three of us in one room, three of us in another. And the door was open in the middle that adjoined the two rooms. And he said, he's like, dude, it was a little cramped. He's like, I didn't really like the accommodations we got, but it's the best we could do. And so I made the best of it. He said, and the first night we had a few beers, and the second night we were, you know, out in the parking lot. He said the second night we were in our room, and he goes, we were having a couple drinks, you know, waiting for the next day when we could meet with the people that were going to be giving us the, you know, how the rundown of what they wanted us to do. We were going to meet the workers. And he said that there was no ice. So a couple of the guys said, hey, we'll go out to get some ice. So they went to go to a store down the street to get the ice. And when they were leaving, they came running back into the room almost immediately. Joe was perplexed by this. He said, what, you know, he heard all this talk, you know, yelling and screaming in the next room over. He walks over to them and he says, what's going on? And they told him, they said, we were walking out to go get the ice and we were just talking and BSing, you know, these two guys, they're American. And he said, we saw something. And they kind of looked at each other and Joe was like you saw something, but nobody was really speaking up and saying what they saw. So finally, one of them said, look, it's going to sound crazy, but I think I just saw a werewolf. And he was like, okay, yeah. And he thought, he goes, and I said, he said this, he said, I honestly thought this. And he told his friend Ronnie this, who originally reached out to me. He said, I thought they were on drugs. He goes, I swear it, I'm not joking. I thought they were on drugs. He said, a lot of people there did drugs, in particular cocaine. And he was like, I thought that's what they were on. And I said, dude, are you guys high? And they were like, no. And he's like, you're not smoking anything? Do you snort anything? And they were like, look, dude, we're not leaving the room. You want to go get the ice? You go get it. And he threw him the truck keys. He says, you can take my truck. Go ahead. But I'm not leaving this room. And the other dude said, I don't even think I'm going to stay here. You know? So Joe said, look, calm down. Let's talk about this. You know, the guy was at him. He's like, I'm leaving. I'm leaving first thing tomorrow. And then so he got one of them to calm down and he took them into the other room and they sat down at the table and he said, tell me what you saw. And this guy was one of the people that was like his right-hand dude that him and his Mike had brought from Florida. And they had worked with this guy for several years. And this man told him, he says, what we saw was something large and black with pointy ears and a huge snout and wolf-like legs and a tail. And it was going around the corner. We saw it from the backside. When it turned the corner, we saw it from the side profile briefly. And he goes, and it looked like a werewolf. He said, yes, this thing looked like it was a 7-foot-tall werewolf-like creature. He said, so it's out there roaming around in the hallway. And Joe said, obviously, you know, he doesn't believe it. He gets aggravated. And but by the same token, this guy that he had worked with for years was not somebody that he knew to be a liar or a fabricator to make up stories. And he's like, and this is what you believe. And he said, yes. The other guy said, I'm done. I'm leaving. I'm not sticking around. And it scared him. Interestingly enough, the other guy had actually had an encounter with something very similar when he was a kid, which terrified him. And he told everybody, he's like, I'm not, he's from Tennessee. He's like, I'm not staying in this place. He goes, I've seen one of these things before when I was a kid, when I was out hunting with my dad. And this guy, which is what I would have done, would have left. He said, I'm leaving. And that's what he did. He didn't leave the very next day. Joe was able to talk him into staying. But no sooner had he talked him into it than he had to go across the hall to use the bathroom because their bathroom was jacked up. But the bathroom across the hall worked, but the whole room and everything else was in shambles. There was no beds. There was nothing. And so it was a big mess. You had to go across the hall to use the bathroom. That guy, they called Davey, went across the hall to use the bathroom. When he was done, he came walking back out and he came face to face with what looked like the shadow, which, as he described it, of a werewolf-looking creature up against the wall that began to move independently, like of any light or darkness. He goes, this was not a shadow. This was some sort of being that looked like a shadow. And it came up off of the wall and began to walk down the hallway and gradually take form. When it did, it got to the end of the hall. He said he stood there frozen and watched it materialize into a werewolf. At that point, he ran into the room, freaking out, and was in tears. And then he got on a plane the next day, and he was gone. After that first day where they had worked and done a bunch of stuff, he started talking to some of the workers, and what he learned was that there was a legend behind this thing. One of the guys that worked there was bilingual, and in fact, he was pretty smart, and he spoke three languages, and he also spoke Portuguese because the guy used to live in Brazil, and the guy told him, he said, there is a story behind this. He goes, I've been running these crews for a long time in this area. He's like, and the workers, they believe that this area is cursed. He was told stories of ghosts and witches and all kinds of other things that had gone on, and he was given a history of the place, and we'll talk about that later, and I'll get into it, but not right now. What happened next and seemed to continue to happen was a series of events that he told me, Joe told me himself. He was like, if I hadn't lived it and gone through it, I never would have believed it was possible. He's like, the day that I was with Ronnie and we were in Mississippi going to the job and we saw that wolf-like creature run across the road, he goes, it shocked me, but it didn't, like, I wasn't stunned. You know, he goes, Ronnie was like in absolute disbelief. And he was even more shocked at how calm I was about it and how I told him that I had seen one of these things before, but it was down in Costa Rica when I was doing a job. And he said that the first time I encountered, and he called it this, he said, the first time I encountered this spook, he goes, it was just a big, creepy, spooky creature. He goes, it was just like I was getting in the elevator, which one time he was getting in the elevator and he got trapped. He got stuck. And he goes, and it was really, really bad. That was like claustrophobic always as a kid. He said, I'd kind of gotten over it. But then after getting stuck in the elevator two or three times and once for like 2 hours, you know, he goes, we were supposed to be working on all these problems. He goes, but every time we'd fix one, another problem would arise. And we kept telling them, really just got to just shut this down and start over. But they didn't want to do it. They clung to the idea that they could make this work. And he said that one day he was in the elevator. And he said, and the elevator stopped like halfway through. And he was kind of afraid to get and kind of crawl. He goes, I could have crawled out and gotten onto my floor, but I was terrified that the elevator might start back up because it would jerk and, you know, just like start up, you know? And so he goes, I just kind of stood there for a minute thinking, should I try to climb up and climb out or should I just wait? And he goes, no sooner had I put my hands up than it started up and I pulled them away because I was like, you know, this thing, it would always start off really quick when it would jolt back to life, as he called it. And he said, I was sitting there and for a split second, I see these weird looking legs like go by for a split second. And I was in between the second and third floor and I was like, whoa, what was that? And he goes, and it looked like giant wolf, you know, paws, whatever. And he goes, and I couldn't wrap my mind around it. And I thought, could that be what these people are seeing? And I thought, surely not, because I had been there for 2 weeks and I hadn't seen anything. And I had heard four different people give me an account of what they saw. Of course, two different people had told him that they had seen it more than once. One of them claimed to have seen it like stick its head through the wall Like it could literally go through the wall while he was in the bathroom across the hall. And he said, dude, I just thought, I'm not seeing this thing, and thank goodness I don't have to see it. So then he goes, I go to bed that night and I'm thinking, did I just see that? Or was it just like my imagination? Maybe the stories that they were telling me were putting things in my head. And I told him at that point, I said, Joe, I know exactly what you're talking about, because I've had people give me stories and then I think for a split second, I see something. And then you kind of don't know what to believe, because maybe talking about it talks it up.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, is it that you manifest it, or is it that maybe your brain is also manifesting it when you kind of delve deep into a story, or like delve real deep into an encounter? Maybe like your brain kind of is like, oh, a shadow that just passed by. Oh, maybe that's something. But it could also be that it could be something, you know? Mm-hmm.
That, well, he was definitely at that crossroads where he had to make a choice. He said, that night I had a nightmare. And in that nightmare, something was trying to pull me out of my bed. Now, here's the thing. He told me, he goes, going into this, I was not a superstitious person. He's like, and in fact, when I was a kid, they said that my abuelita's house was haunted. I never saw anything. He's like, and I wasn't one of those that was scared by ghost stories and tales of brujeria and all this other. He goes, that didn't bother me. I was just like, whatever. And I just went on with my life. He said, but there was something that happened to me once when I was a kid. We were walking home from a birthday party, and we had been, you know, we were real poor, and we didn't have a vehicle, and we were walking home from our cousin's birthday, and we had been messing around, playing around. They had a pinata, and it was a lot of fun. He's like, and I'm walking home, and one of my cousins points up to a tree and says, look, there's a lechuza. He's like, when we looked up, of course, the lechuza is like this bird-like creature that looks like it's a woman. It's like a witch. He said, I look up, and for a split second, I thought I saw something that looked like a bird with a woman's face, and it jumped out of the tree and took off flying. And I was thinking, did I just see that? Or was it suggested to me, and then I saw it? You know, so he goes, so I put it out of my mind. And I always attributed it to just being my mind playing tricks, because somebody suggested that's what that was. He said, so I kind of did the same thing with these wolf legs. He's like, these feet. It was just the manifestation of my imagination, you know, something that just made me believe that it was there. It wasn't real. And he said, in this dream that I had, he's like, something tried to grab me and pull me out of my bed. And when I look up, as I'm falling off the bed, I see this, what looks like a werewolf. He goes, but it looked like, you know, something from The Howling. And in fact, he goes, the more I thought about it at breakfast, I thought that is what I saw. And he thought, I've seen that movie. It scared me as a kid, but not terrifyingly scared. But he goes, yeah, it was unnerving. So he goes, I know that all this talk about these people seeing these werewolf looking creatures and these shadow creatures. He's like, I thought this is probably what that's why I had the dream. So I rationalized it away. He's like, but the next night, same thing. I had another dream. And this time I rolled out of bed and I looked over behind me, and there was this creature squatted down with its arms on its legs, looking at me across my bed. Werewolf looking thing. Once again, like something out of The Howling. And I kept thinking, man, this job is really getting to me. We're stressed out. Everybody's like arguing. Nothing works. You know, it's like we have one problem after another. He's like, workers were quitting. And one worker claimed to have been attacked by a spirit that looked like a woman, just an angry woman that came into his room, literally with feathers in her hair, looking like some sort of native. And like slapped him and like clawed his chest. And he kind of like wrestled with her. And then, you know, he quit. He gave us this really weird story and then just quits. And he goes, and I'm thinking, is this real? Is this really happening? Are these people just like losing their minds? Is everybody just drinking? Are they doing drugs? He goes, because I started to think maybe it was just a psychosis. He goes, I tried to rationalize. He goes, my dad's very much like that. I had to rationalize everything, you know? He's like, so I was talking to one of the workers downstairs, one of the housekeeping people. And she told me a crazy story. He said that she had been working there for about 11 years. And he said that when she first started working there, she was told that on the fourth and fifth floors, there was a creature of some kind that was made of smoke. This is what she was told by the head housekeeper at that time, who hadn't been working there for several years, and said that this thing, if you see a black swirling smoke or any kind of black smoke, to run, to get out of there, get away from there, and never go up to those floors alone. Always have somebody with you. She said that over the years, she had seen something that was described to her, or described to him as a werewolf. She had seen it twice, both times on the fifth floor, but she said over the last few years, this thing seems like it had migrated, and it was starting to appear on the second and third floor. Not where it had ever been before. And she said that used to, she would go up there and she knew that if she was on those floors, there would always be two or three of the ladies together. They'd always be together. And she said you were less likely to see it or witness it if you were with people. But she was with one of her coworkers the first time she saw it. The second time, she was by herself. Her coworker was across the hall. She was on the fourth floor and, or the fifth floor, and she was in the other room. And she looks over and she sees this thing staring at her from the hallway that looked like a gray-haired werewolf creature. And she's like, I don't know what to make of it. She said, I look, and then I said, in the name of Jesus, you know, and then it just was gone. And so I asked him, I said, that's all she said? She just said, in the name of Jesus? She said, yeah. She just said, in Jesus' name, and that's it, and it was gone. She didn't even have to complete a sentence. She just said that. He said, so one day, he's like, I'm eating my lunch and I'm in one of the spare rooms and I just went in. There was material everywhere. So I found a place to eat my lunch. He's like, and I look in the bathroom from across the hall. I can see this thing. And I'm sitting there and I watch this thing come out of where the bathroom was and turn the corner. And when it did, it was looking down, it looked up, and it saw me. He's like, and then it turned its head from side to side. Very much physical looking. He's like, and then it even pushed the door open a little more. He said, and I saw its weird looking hands. He's like, and I was staring right at it. It was a blackish gray creature. And he goes, and it was 7 foot tall, at least. And it was massive. And it walked slowly toward me. And then I could hear some of the workers coming down the hall talking. I could hear their tools clanging. He's like, and I thought, how is this going to play out? Then he goes, I could hear them all kind of like audibly. They just stopped talking and started talking, you know, like running. You could hear them running. The talking stopped and it turned into yelling and panic. They had seen this thing. And this thing turned, looked toward them, looked toward me, and then made the decision to take a left and go down the hallway the other way. It didn't run. It didn't move quickly in any shape or form. He's like, and believe me, it can move quick because I saw it do that too. He's like, at that time, my heart was in my throat, and I just fell onto the table, and I thought, oh my gosh. He's like, and then I went into the bathroom, and I puked. I didn't feel like eating. And then he told me, he said, in another time. He goes, I was working late. I was there. A whole week had gone by and there had been no sightings. Nothing had happened. And I thought, well, maybe the worst of it's over. Maybe we're not going to see this thing anymore. And maybe all these ghosts and weird shadows, because people were seeing all kinds of stuff. He said the shadow creatures people were seeing, some of them looked wolf-like, but they were on all fours. And he goes, and then there was one that had horns like a devil. And it was a shadow. And people were seeing it too and smelling sulfur. He said another one just looked like an angry Indian woman, which he had heard that smacked the guy. And he was like, I didn't know what to make of all this. I didn't see any of those. He's like, but what I did see was this creature once again, if you want to call it that. He goes, and I was behind the plastic and I was working on with a skill saw with two other workers. they wanted to go take a smoke break. Now, it's one of those places where he's like, the wall was wide open and the wind could blow right in. And it was chilly. He goes, I was there. And for at that time, for Costa Rica, yeah, it was a little bit chilly. He's like, and I was surprised at how cold it had gotten. He goes, and for that time of year even, he's like, and then I noticed that the plastic on the other side of the wall was like moving back and forth. And there was nothing there. I could see right through it. And I thought, that's weird. And then it began to look like somebody was smacking it, even punching it or kicking it. And he goes, and then I thought, oh no, something's about to happen. And then he's like, I see this black swirling smoke that I had never seen before, but I had heard talked about. And these legs appear, and then this torso appears, and then this head. And for a split second there were no arms. It was just that. And then I stared at it for a little bit, and I wanted to scream. And I wanted to yell to the guys I was working with. One of them's name was Andrew. And I was going to tell him, Andy, come and look at this. But he was off smoking a cigarette, and I could hear them talking, and they were a ways away from me. And I couldn't stop staring at what I was looking at. And eventually, I saw the arms, everything was, you know, right in front of me. Huge, massive shoulders. Very different creature, though, from the one I had seen that day across the hall when I was eating my sandwich on the fourth floor. He's like, this was on the fifth floor. And this one was black, but much bigger, much more pronounced, much more muscular looking. He's like, and while I stared at this thing, I had the skill saw in my hand, and I thought, this is my only weapon. But if it comes close enough, this is what I'm going to use. If this thing is physical enough to manipulate things, then it's probably physical enough to be cut and killed. And I thought, how is it able to be invisible one minute and then physical the next? I have no idea. But I saw it move the plastic and then take a step toward me. Then another step toward me. And I wanted to scream to my friends and say, hey, Andy, help. But I didn't. And I thought about screaming out, like the housekeeper said, in Jesus' name. But I didn't. I couldn't talk. I couldn't move. He goes, and I was completely frozen with fear. I was paralyzed. He's like, but what I did do was start up the skill saw. And the noise and the buzzing, he goes, and I just like stuck it down under the wood. And this had an effect on this creature because it slowly backed away, went back through the plastic, turned and walked down the hall and turned off into one of the rooms. At that point, he's like, I put the saw down and he told me, he says, I'm going to tell you right now. He's like, I was done. I was like, I quit. I am not working here anymore. I will not work under these conditions. I can't do it. I got to go. He's like, I didn't have a wife and kids back home like some of the other guys and more incentive to leave. He's like, so I did this. I talked to the boss. My boss told me, he's like, look, we got to get this job done. If you stay, we'll give you a 50% raise. At that point, he says, give me a day to think about it. So he took a day, went down to the beach. He said, I took a swim. I come back out. He goes, and I feel invigorated and I feel more alive. He's like, and I went to the church. He's like, I'm a Catholic. They had a Catholic church there. I went and I talked to one of the priests. He's like, I went to confession. And then I said, when you get a chance, Father, can we talk? And he said, sure. Come back tonight, you know, when everything's slow and we can talk. So he had a day to himself to do that, you know. So that night, he's like, after I went, I ate some fish, had a delicious dinner, just some time to myself to clear my head. I went to the church and I talked to a guy named Father Marquez. He goes, and what he told me, he says, I can tell you're troubled. And there's something going on that's beyond just mental, emotional. It's spiritual. And he's like, he made me feel at ease. He made me feel comfortable. And he says, tell me what's troubling your mind. And he said, I told him everything from beginning to end. He said, and after me talking for about 30 minutes about the things that happened to me and about another 30 minutes of the things that had happened to other people, he's like, and another 30 minutes of me crying and just trying to get myself together, he's like, Father Marquez talked to me and he says, I know exactly what you're talking about. He said, see, this whole area was once ruled by a native tribe and they were cannibalistic. And they didn't just eat people and do bad things. He's like, they were known to be shapeshifters. One of these people, the chief of this tribe, was a cannibal tribe, had two sons, and all three of them were known to take the form of different types of creatures. It was even rumored that they could turn into sharks. Nobody knows for sure what the real story is, but that's the explanation to why these things are seen where they're seen. The people that owned the hotel were very strict about not talking about it. It was something that they did not let their employees do. And anytime someone talked about it or said that they saw something weird, they swept it under the rug. Now, you got to remember, this is in the 80s. This was in the late 80s when it started doing the build. And by the time he got there, it was 1990. And in fact, when he went there in November 1990, it was right after I had seen what I saw, which I thought was interesting. November 15th was the day he got there, in fact. And that would have been a time when I had only seen the Dog Man maybe 2 weeks. It had only been 2 weeks in my mind that I'd come to the reality that it existed. So it's a very weird timeline. But he said, one of the things that he talked about, he said, the people that were running this operation were not interested in stories of werewolves, witches, and ghosts, and shadow people. He said, they had a job to do. And he goes, and then it began to hit me. He's like, it's like everybody knows that this is going on. But nobody's really, really, really talking about it. Nobody's coming up with the real reasons why it's happening. And he's like, and I don't think that they ever will. He said, and at that point, I made up my mind. I said, I'm done. I will not work here anymore. I'm going to leave. So that's what I did. He's like, I went back to my boss and I said, I quit. I'm not going to work here anymore. He's like, I'll finish out the month. He's like, we got a week left, and then I'm going to head back home. And his boss didn't push him. He said, that's fine. And his boss said, but remember, you know, you have a huge bonus that's waiting at the end of this job if you can finish it, and that's going to, you're going to forfeit that. And he thought about it, and he said, yeah, I already decided that's acceptable. His boss was like, I'm really surprised that you're going to let these stories scare you and run you off. And he talked to his boss and he said, let me ask you a question. He's like, have you stayed here overnight? Have you seen any of this, of these things that people are talking about? And his boss said, no, I haven't. He goes, well, maybe when you do, because when I leave, you're going to be here doing my job until you find another guy. He's like, and getting workers to come and work here is becoming harder and harder. So good luck with that. His boss very snarkily told him, well, I guess that's a chance I'm going to have to take. I hope the boogeyman doesn't get me. And then he replied to his boss, I hope so too. Because he told him, you know, Danny, that was his name. He said, I like you. And I would hate for you to have to deal with the things that I've dealt with. And it's unfortunate that you're not taking me seriously. That's why I have to quit. And he said, well, if I had seen what you claim to have seen, I guess I would understand. And he goes, I don't even think you really, it's possible for you to understand. He told you, as I told my boss, I don't think it's possible for you to understand what I've gone through for 3 months being there and not seeing something every day, but dealing with people who are seeing things weekly. And he's like, and it's not every day, like you said, but 3 or 4 times a week, somebody's having an incident or having something happen.
Yeah, that's really ramped up, actually.
Mm-hmm. And he said that two workers got injured really bad. One lost two fingers and another in an accident, and another one got a nail stuck through his hand and impaled onto the wall. And he said, and it was just like really weird stuff that would not happen on another job. So when he talked to the owner's daughter who came to visit, she struck up a conversation with him. It was the second day after he had talked to his boss, and he was downstairs. He was getting some coffee and getting some breakfast. And she said, "Are you the one who's in charge?" He said, "For now, but I'm leaving." And she says, "Oh, let me guess. You saw something." He said, "Yeah, it goes beyond that." And she says, "Yeah, when I was a little girl and my dad first bought this place, I would play here. I would go through the halls and just run around doing whatever." And she's like, "And one day I saw a man. He was sitting cross-legged on the third floor. And he looked like a native. And I walked up to him and I thought, what is this grown man doing sitting here looking like an Indian?" And she walked up to him and she says, "Who are you?" And he turned and she said, his face quickly morphed into something that looked almost like a bear mixed with a wolf. And it lunged at me. She's like, "And then I saw this weird, like sort of like watery looking," she couldn't describe it to him. She's like, "It just looked like water. Like when you touch water and how it just kind of like, you know, moves."
Yeah.
Like and wavy.
Huh?
Like wavy or flowy.
Yeah. She just said it looked like water. Like when you touch water and it kind of moves and this the way it flows. And she's like, "And then just like that, he was gone." When she went to her dad and she told her dad, she said, "You know, I was on the fourth floor and I was playing, you know," and she's like, and she had a ball she would kick around. And this was during the time when the first time they tried to renovate it, when they first got it, you know. And she said, "I told my dad about it. And my dad said, don't go up to those floors. There's something there." And they found when they first bought the place, they found these weird animal bones in one of the rooms on the fifth floor. And they found this weird looking wolf skull that had been painted and had all kinds of weird symbols on it. When they showed some of the workers began to panic, and a bunch of them quit because this was a curse. It was a curse, and they were reminded of it by the people who had once lived there and told them never to build on that land. But they did it anyway, and they continue to do it to this day. In fact, it's very congested and just built up. And supposedly, to this day, there are still things that happen periodically. Strange things like accidents and people seeing all kinds of weird ghosts and, you know, there's stories of these things. One of the things that I learned, too, by talking to him, he didn't just, like, put it out of his mind and go away. He stayed in touch with some of the workers that he became friends with, and one of them got attacked by something in one of the rooms, and the guy that became his successor was somebody he knew and that he had actually worked with before, and he recommended the guy. And he said, "I was very honest, and I told him the whole story, me and Mike both." He's like, "And one of the workers that we had that worked there, he got attacked in one of the rooms. And not only did he get attacked, but whatever it was that attacked him bit his arm, and it was real. Like, it was like you could see, like, there were bite marks, actual canid looking bite marks on this guy's shoulder and his arm." He's like, "You could see it down to the bone, like it had taken part of his muscle off." And he's like, "Whatever this was that attacked him, they chalked it up to a dog. They said it must have been a dog that had gotten loose and was running around the hotel. And the police said that, and they wrote it up that way, that it was a dog attack." And this guy was very adamant. He said, "Dogs don't walk around on two legs, and they don't look like some sort of werewolf." He's like, "They don't look like that." He's like, whatever it was that attacked me, he's like, it was like something out of American Werewolf in London and The Howling. Whatever this thing was, it was vicious, and it tried to kill him. Another guy eventually fell and broke both of his legs and his back because he was chased off of the top of the fifth floor. And when he was questioned by the authorities, once again, his story, he stuck by it and said a giant werewolf got down on all fours and chased him until he leapt. He was willing to take a chance on his life. Luckily, where he landed wasn't the worst spot. He just, you know, the ground was soft enough and he just broke his legs and his back and he lived. He's like, if he would have fallen in any other way, he would have been dead. And I was also told by the guys that were in charge, this is what I was told by Joe. He said, I was told by the guys that were in charge that we were fortunate that no one died. He said, once my boss got done with that project and they eventually abandoned it is what they did and left it to someone else to finish. He came back to the States. He was in Georgia. And he asked me to come work on a project in Georgia. And I flew up there and we were in Atlanta and we sat down and we talked. He said, at that point, it was 1992. And I told him, I said, did you get enough of the project? Did you get to see anything that could vindicate me to show you that I wasn't lying? And he says, I was going to tell you this on the phone, but I decided it would be better. I would just wait and tell you in person. And he's like, you're 100% vindicated in my book. He said, what happened? He said, well, for me personally, he goes, I was asleep in one of the rooms and I heard this scratching noise at the door. When I heard the scratching, I got up to go and see what it was because I thought maybe one of the workers or somebody was standing outside and maybe they were just like drunk or I don't know what it was. But I figured that, you know, surely it was a person. He's like, I opened the door without even looking at the people. And what was scratching on the door was standing in front of me. And it was a 7-foot-tall, hairy, wolf-like creature standing on its hind legs. He's like, I stood there frozen. He's like, the scratching had been so loud that the guys across the hall had opened the door and seen it too. They saw it from the backside. And they screamed, closed the door, and I slammed the door shut. This thing began to smack itself up against my door. I don't know how, because I didn't look to the peephole to see. He's like, but it was trying to get into my room. He's like, I locked it, bolted it, did everything I could to put a chair up in front of the door, and eventually it stopped. He's like, and then I opened the door, and there were these huge gashes on the door, where this thing had physically done whatever it was. He's like, and another time, I was shaving. He's like, and this was the second time I saw it and the last time I saw it, because after that, I quit. And he's like, and I was shaving. He's like, and I turn and I look and I see this shadow appear on the wall that looked like a wolf or a dog or something, canine. And it began to stand up on its hind legs and turn more manlike. And then as it did, it got darker and darker and blacker, and it began to walk out of the wall. And it was not a part of the wall anymore. It was not a shadow at all. It was some sort of werewolf. And he goes, and while I stood there staring at it in shock, I just turned and I threw my razor down and I ran out into the hallway. He's like, I had a towel on, nothing else. He's like, and some of the guys found me out in the hall yelling like a madman, and they all accompanied me back into the room. There was nothing there. So then I requested to get into a different room. That night I had a nightmare that something was chasing me, and I ran out of the hotel and it chased me all the way to the beach. I was trying to get away from it. And at that point, he's like, I was done. I was absolutely done. I put in my resignation and I left. He's like, the guys that ran the company, they called him up and said, hey, don't quit. We'll bring you back to the United States and we'll put you on another project. Shortly thereafter, they canceled everything. Brought all their people home. Let the workers go. Said, we can't do this anymore. This is too much. And they never really talked about it again. He talked to one of his bosses at one point, and he said, what do you think of this? And his boss asked him. Now, this is Joe's boss talking to his boss. And Joe's boss told his boss, I think that place is cursed. I think it's haunted. And I think that there's werewolves there. He's like, if you would have asked me 6 months ago, I would have told you, I would have swore up on a Bible. There was no such thing. Even though I had never seen one he's like, the thought had never even crossed my mind that werewolves or vampires or ghosts or any of that could have even existed. He's like, I didn't believe in anything. Completely atheistic, completely against believing in anything spiritual, believing in anything remotely outside the norm. He goes, I thought people that saw UFOs were crazy. I thought whenever I saw a tabloid standing in the line at the grocery store, I would just laugh and say, all that paranormal stuff, that's just for crazy people, not people like me who build things and make things happen. He goes, I built skyscrapers. I built parking garages, hotels. I don't build crap I don't build crap, and I don't believe in crap. He's like, now? He's like, I don't know what else could be out there. He's like, the scariest part about going through this is what Joe's boss told him. He's like, guys like you and I now, we know that there's something else out there. And now that we know that that exists, what else could exist? And when Joe told me that, it hit home to me like a ton of bricks. I said, Joe, that is the question. And that's what got me into this.
I think it's like a scary realization for a lot of people, because I think once they already have that encounter and they're already dealing with that, then they slowly start like every shadow that they see or every like noise that they hear, they think it could potentially be something. Yeah. And they stop thinking about like, oh, what if it's the same thing, but like what's going to come at me next? So then they start, I think they become very closed off. And it, especially so if you have like people that when you try to tell their story, they become very like condescending and start looking down on you or start picking apart your story or like start looking at you differently because you have a traumatizing encounter that you're expecting someone to have some sympathy for at least just hear you out. And then they're like, okay, whatever you say, dude, or don't say anything, but just look at them funny. Like that's all it really takes sometimes.
Yeah. It's gotta be isolating because it upends everything they thought they believed about the limitations of reality and where the line between real and fiction is drawn. It just becomes a big blur.
And those kind of things are interesting to me because, I'm not like, there's people who see stuff from a very young age and it's just like common for them. Like Jesus Payan, for instance, like he said in the book that, it's very common for him his entire life to be seeing stuff. So it was never a question of like, oh, is this, what is this? Or what's going on now? It was always just like, what experience is happening now? Like what new thing is coming at me now? And it was kind of similar to me where like, it was never like a mystery to me, or it never was like something where I had to question it. So I've always been curious about those people that do have that like disbelief. Or they just don't, like he said, like he didn't care about it. He didn't think about it. It wasn't in his mind at all. And then this happens, like what their mindset after, what would that be? Because for me, I know that if something happened to me, like what happened when I saw that weird ghost thing, it was just like, oh, ghost, got to get away now. Like just stay away from it. But like, how would you react if like you definitely don't believe or like you... It's got to be terrifying. It's got to be like heart pounding to where it's the point where you can't move.
It's harder than somebody who does believe.
Definitely.
I wonder though, what indigenous tribe would that have been in that area?
The only problem with that is, we can find out, but if we, I can't
give too much. Yeah,
it would reveal the location.
Yeah, I can't do that because Joe R. I told him and
yeah, because I could just look up like where that tribe was at and then look up mm-hmm. hotels and just like.
Unfortunately, yeah. His boss has passed away. His boss kind of died in a weird way too. He was on a trip in Colorado and something happened to him. But yeah, it was really odd because in fact, you know, four different people that worked on that project died prematurely, I guess if you want to call it that. I mean, they died like in their 40s, you know, and didn't seem like the way that they died was bizarre, each one of them, I thought. At least when Joe was talking and he was telling me, oh yeah, well, this person, they're not alive anymore. And I'm like, every time he would say that, it would be like some sort of weird like death. Like one of them died in a skiing accident, which is weird, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like it's not uncommon, but it's still like weird.
Yeah, but not normal stuff. Another one had a hunting accident.
Still like stuff where like it's possible, but it's still weird. Like,
see, it's not probable.
Yeah.
You know. And I asked Joe about that, you know, and he's older now, you know, but I asked him, I said, you know, he wasn't real old when this was going on, when this happened. He's older than me, but he was like the youngest boss, you know, the youngest superintendent in that company at the time. And, you know, us, we do a lot of construction security, and we talk to a lot of superintendents, and we know how much pressure they're under and how hard it can be to finish a project and get things going and how they start to just push, you know. And we end up becoming under a lot of pressure, too, trying to help them. But it's interesting, though, when he was talking about how he was under all this enormous pressure to get this job done. And then he started finding out more and more about the people who were trying to get him to get it done. And then he started finding out more and more about the area and the locals and what they believed. And one day when he was at a restaurant, he was out there eating, and he goes, there was this really good place we would go to eat fish. He's like, they would get the fish fresh out of the ocean, you know, catch it. And then he's like, and we're there and we're talking to these people. And the waitress was like, you work there? And he was like, yeah. And she's like, people come and go. They stay in these hotels all the time. And most of the time, nothing happens. But she's like, every once in a while, she goes, I'll meet someone. She's like, one time I met this couple. They were Korean, but they spoke, you know, very good Spanish. And she's like, and they were used to traveling and doing stuff. And in fact, at that time, I think she said that they were like living in Peru or something, and they had decided to go travel around and whatever. And she said that the guy the guy's wife told her, she's like, that hotel is extremely haunted. And she said that she was sort of like a psychic, you know. She said that the spirits there will never rest. That they built that hotel right on top of the leader of this tribe. They built it on his grave. And what's even crazier, like, is that, you know, like, why on the fourth or fifth floor? Well, because whatever was put there inside of the drawer in that hotel room that they found was from someone who was a descendant of that tribe. Had to be. And they probably put that in there as a curse. And if it's true that these shamans and there's a dad and, you know, his kids, you know, whatever, who were lesser chiefs, you know, they have ability to shapeshift when they were alive, you know, they're just angry deceased spirits that can do it in death. You know, I've heard it said by psychics people and ghost people, the ghost people will have a different view. The cryptid people are always going to be like, oh, no, you know, because it's a lot of them are either atheists who don't believe in any of it, or they're very religious minded and they don't believe, you know. They just don't. Like, they don't see it that way. They don't believe that these things can do any of these things in death. Once you die, it's like heaven or hell. That's it. But it's not necessarily that cut and dry. And I don't care what anybody says. It's just not.
What strikes me about this thing that makes me believe that it's been there for a long time is how brazen it is.
Or and, it was.
You know, and like it just didn't care if you saw it. And in fact, like it was more like when it was spotted, like it was interrupted basically about an attack. That guy, when he was by himself, and then that group stumbles in and they see it too. And then he's like, oops. You guys interrupted me, but I guess I'll just wander off now. It was more like inconvenience more than it was like trying to hide.
I think another thing we could have been dealing with too, you know how when they do renovations or remodeling and stuff, mm-hmm. it stuff awakens things?
Yeah, stirs stuff, something yeah. up.
I think there was already stuff there that was happening. But I think that it just got more pronounced and more aggressive because of the... of the working, they'd knock down walls and...
It probably remind... I mean, if it is true that it was built on this chief's grave, then construction workers in general might remind him of when it was first built, and he might have, like, a personal grudge against construction workers. So when he sees, like, some people actually doing similar work on the building that is built, like, is literally on him, on his grave, he might have a special kind of, like, hatred towards them. That might be why he like specifically attacked them so much, because he, like you said, it was 2 days. It was like almost instant, basically, before activities started ramping up.
Well, folks, I guess that's it. I don't know what else it could be. I don't know what else to call it. I don't know what else to think of it. I mean, it is what it is. Here's something interesting, and I'll close with this. Joe, now he's living in Arkansas. And he had moved, you know, a couple times and worked different places. And he says, dude, I don't live that far from Falk, Arkansas. He's like, and I did some research and I found out that, well, Falk obviously is known for a creature. And I gave him some information. I gave him Lyle's work, you know, on the Beast of Boggy Creek. And he read a couple books about it and he thought that it was pretty interesting. And of course, I've talked to Lyle Blackburn many times about the Falk monster and things like that. And Joe said, you know, it caught his interest. So he decided to go to Falk and check it out. And he says, he goes, now knowing what I know about these types of things, that they do exist. This does exist. He goes, and I would tell anyone, in fact, encourage them to learn and research about these things. Whenever something comes up, where one of these things could be causing problems, doing whatever they do, you know, whether they're physical, spiritual, whatever. He's like, I don't discount anything anymore. I believe that anything is possible. He's like, whereas before, he goes, I would have just laughed. He's like, and seeing what I saw that day with Ronnie when we were working in Mississippi, he goes, it was just like, smacked me right in the face. But he goes, it didn't unnerve me like it did Ronnie. And he said Ronnie was a lot more disturbed by it because he had never seen something like this. He's like, going what I went through in Costa Rica changed everything. And I explained to him that what I saw changed my life. So that's it, folks. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe. If you have any questions, give them to me on the live stream. I'll see you.